Little Mixer, and shout out to my ex, and that introduces me nicely to on the subject of infidelity in this week's Wellbeing Window. Gavin.
Good morning, Sarah.
How are you going to start this? I'm a bit nervous.
Nervous?
Well, I'm quite good at putting my foot in it, and I might give too much away. But go on, let's start by what constitutes cheating and infidelity in your view?
Well, I think a very pertinent question, because we could spend the whole morning just talking about that. I think for me, cheating is when we breach, well, it's a breach of trust. And I think if we are keeping intimate, emotional, or sexual secrets from our partner, that's going to lead to a breach of trust. And sometimes the misunderstanding comes because a couple will come in and one part of the couple will say, I haven't had an affair, but I sent some flirty texts to my secretary, but I've never touched another woman or another man, depending on which partner is presenting. But the answer is that infidelity is so much more than a sexual betrayal. And sometimes the work in the therapy room is helping someone recognize it's not that the person cheated, it's also that they lied. So for me, it's that keeping of secrets. It's anything that takes away from the primary love relationship.
So it's anything that for you might consider the other person would be hurt by because they felt they've been lied to. In that respect, just going back to what, you know, the cheating and the infidelity, for example, some people might say, well, if I was to kiss somebody else, is that really considered to be cheating? I might have had one too many. I mean, let's be honest here. I might have had one too many drinks. Yes, I had a kiss with somebody. Should I, A, tell my partner about it? Is it better to keep quiet and not say anything? Or is it better to say something but to try and explain that it meant nothing? Because in your books, that isn't regarded as necessarily being of cheating.
So this is the bit where you're worried about giving too much away.
No, I'm just asking. I'm just saying if, but. No, it is a question that I've had from a listener who wishes to remain anonymous, but she wanted to know where do you start saying certain things are considered to be infidelity and cheating and other things aren't?
Well, I think every couple has to define what the boundaries are in their relationship. Very often the clue is that I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. Well, then why is it a secret? Why have you not come home and said, let's say it's a woman who's kissed someone out in the pub later, oh, I had a great snog with someone in the pub this evening. So the keeping out of a secret is a clue. Now, whether you disclose, again, like with all these things, there's no absolutes, there's no right, there's no wrong. So in the case of that, you may choose not to disclose. I think with all secrets, what I'd say about relationships is that secrets really damage the intimacy. So a very corny way of thinking about intimacy is into me see. And if I love my partner and I want my partner to be able to see into me, the more secrets I hold, the more that intimacy is going to start to get a bit fuzzy.
Okay, and well, that brings me on to talking about fuzziness and the time that we're living in at the moment, and with the lockdown for over a year now. Do you think we're having more affairs or fewer affairs in lockdown than before?
Oh, you're looking at me funny when you say that. there's two pieces of research that came out recently, and both would suggest that we're up to lots of naughty things, because one was the Kinsey Institute, who have been studying all of our romantic and sexual behaviors since the pandemic started. And in their survey, 20% of participants have contacted an ex-partner during the pandemic. And the other research that came out recently was there is a very well-known dating site, I won't publicize them, for married individuals in primarily the US. They have seen an increase of 1,500 new members per day since the pandemic started. And, you know, it makes sense that, look, all of us, individuals and couples, have been under so much strain during the pandemic. So it follows that lots of individuals might have turned outside their relationships for emotional, and again, I'm stressing the emotional and or sexual contact.
Okay, and I've just had an email in from a listener, this came in earlier on, that said, I just heard you announcing that Gavin's coming in, and can you ask him, my wife cheated on me many years ago, we divorced, I am now happily married, I believe that once someone cheats, they have the capacity to do it again, why take the risk, it was the best decision I ever made.
Well, it's, I guess in this case that worked out for this person, it was the best decision they made. I don't know that as a rule of thumb that once someone cheats, you know, it's like once a cheater, always a cheater. I suspect we've all got the capacity to do it. It's whether we choose to or not. And so it sounds like in this case, this person made a decision and it worked for them. But I've also done a lot of work with couples in repairing the breach of trust after an infidelity. So I would like to think that it's, you know, more nuanced than that for most of us.
Yeah, so obviously he's moved forward. It suited him to do that way. And of course, it probably depends on individual cases and couples, is what you're saying. Mm. With respect to that, when somebody is cheating on you and you, who do you think cheats more, rather? Do you think men and women, or do men and women view infidelity differently?
It's a good question. I think the problem with the research is that what we've also discovered is that a lot of people lie when they get asked this question, and we men tend to exaggerate when we talk about sexual affairs, and women have a tendency to minimize. But most research shows that men have more affairs than women. Having said that, over the last 20 years, there is some research that came out of the States that said more women are having affairs. And, you know, I guess that makes sense, because since the sexual revolution and women's liberation, you know, actually women have more, and thank God, sexual freedom than before. I think to your question, which I think is very pertinent, do men and women view infidelity differently? I think so. And I think that men typically see sex and intimacy as being separate. And I think for men, sex can just be about sex. And a note, however, of caution, if you say it was just sex, it didn't mean anything, yeah, that's not the right thing to say. It might be partly true. But I think women will connect sex, and I am generalizing here, but women will connect sexual and emotional behaviors. So for women, the emotional bonding is more important. So therefore, women sometimes perceive an emotional affair as more threatening to the relationship than a sexual affair. So it'd be a big difference between the way men and women see infidelity.
Okay, and you think that has a mate? Because they even say, I was reading something that says infidelity is linked to money in countries where men and women make similar amounts of money. Reports of infidelity were much more parallel.
Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that male privilege and a lot of men who get to exert more power, more control, then yes, it would make sense perhaps that where the scales are more evenly balanced, then that report makes sense to me.
Mm. And what do you think on, you were talking about the figures in the US, I mean, France, let's face it, it's had that reputation of, you know, every Frenchman has a mistress, and every mistress has a mistress, I think. How do you balance that between the difference between the countries and cultures and how we look at it? I mean, even if you take France for some of their political figures and people in the limelight that have had affairs, and it's just not, I mean, you don't bat an eyelid.
Yes, I think that culture, and that's why all this research only helps us up to a point, because it does depend on culture. And you're absolutely right. The French will view infidelity very different to the Brits, and they will view it very different perhaps to the Americans. So again, you know, one of the first things I'm doing when I sit down to a couple is trying to understand, what does this breach of trust mean to you? Because if, let's say, I don't know, it's a British woman married to a French husband, Let's say it's the man who's been cheating. Did you discuss this? Are you both aware of each other's views on infidelity? So, but the cultural aspect to it is of course very important.
Okay, we have a question that I'll read out and you can answer it after a little break. Every man I have ever dated cheated on me. Why is that? Gavin will be answering that question from a listener after this from Elton John and Kiki D. Elton John and Kiki D there, and Don't Go Breaking My Heart. And I'm joined by Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. And we're talking about infidelity for this month's Wednesday's Wellbeing Window. Gavin, just before I played the song, I asked you a question from a listener. Every man I have ever dated cheated on me. Why is that?
Look, I guess there are a couple of explanations. The first is that this person has been desperately unlucky. And of course, that can be the case. Another explanation is that we sometimes, and unconsciously, we sometimes pick people who are emotionally unavailable. And we pick people who therefore have a tendency to stray. And that's because we ourselves might be frightened of intimacy. So it's rather like I had a client many years ago, and one of the things he said to me is, well, I've only ever met married women. And I'm like, really? In the whole universe of people out there, you've only met married women. So that's convenient. And, you know, obviously I was being challenging because, again, it's possible. But then there might be something else at play, because maybe there's trying to win the person over. Maybe there's the fact that actually this person is never going to be fully emotionally available and intimate to me. So I don't know, but sometimes there are reasons for it.
Okay, I hope that answers your question. But also sometimes there's just no rhyme or reason to it. And you can obviously put yourself through awful pressure and beat yourself up about it. But it can just be a fact that you haven't actually met the right person. Mm-hmm. And that can bring us back to the thing of saying, once a cheater, always a cheater. Sometimes surely can't work, I'm asking you, because people that have had affairs and got together and stayed together happily ever after. So they were obviously with the wrong person.
Yes, it's possible that when there's an infidelity, one of the things that I will look at is it symptomatic of the relationship? And by the way, you know, again, another caveat, none of this is to condone an affair. So for whoever has done the cheating, they have to be accountable for their behavior. Whatever may or may not have been happening in the relationship, that person made a decision to cheat and to stray. And so some of the work is firstly being able to understand for the person why they strayed, what was the impact for the other person, and then we can look at what the relationship, what might have been wrong with the relationship in the first place. So yes, it's possible that you two weren't compatible, you were in the wrong relationship, and what you've learned from the affair is to separate, and you've learned that, to go your separate ways. And having said that, I've done some very moving work with couples who have healed a betrayal and gone on to have probably even greater intimacy and a healthier relationship than they had in the first place. And there's a very famous author called Esther Perel, and she writes a lot about cheating in the modern era. And she says that she's a therapist, and she often says to her couples, now that your first marriage to each other is over, what would you like to do with the next one to each other? And I like that because for me, it gives me hope.
It's a new start. How much do you think that that does depend on why people cheat? I mean, it can be from maybe, as you said, this lack of communication within a couple that sparks already when you're trying a relationship and it's just not working, but you want to make it work because you love the person. But you're finding yourself up against maybe the everyday challenges, especially at the moment with lockdown, with putting up with the other person, putting up with all their little mm-hmm. habits that you used to see just a little bit of and now under the microscope. How do you think that can maybe justify somebody wandering away for a while?
I think it's understandable. I don't know that I would necessarily use the word justify. But again, the work in that I do with couples and is to understand, you know, there's two things. How did this impact the person who's been betrayed? Mm. And what were the reasons for the person who did the betraying? And so the reasons are, to your question, are really important. And it could be that, as you say, that they've been in lockdown, there isn't any room to be independent. And sometimes, again, I did work with a couple many years ago, and what through both of them is that they had been blissfully and happily married for something like 15, 20 years. I can't remember the exact number. But what came out in the work was that this couple was so merged together that they, both of them, but the cheating partner felt it more, in this case it was a man, basically felt he'd lost his identity. Mm. And actually what he was looking for, and he's still accountable, he's still responsible, but what he was looking for was not necessarily someone else, but terribly cliched, he was looking to find himself. So I think it's always about understanding if the opportunity is there and the couple is prepared to do the work. At some point when the crisis is over, it's about, okay, what was this about for both of you, but first and foremost for the person who did the cheating.
So it's both parties taking on their responsibility to acknowledge why maybe that happened?
Yes, but I would say, but the first thing is for the cheating partner needs to be able to make amends. I mean, the affair needs to be over. If a couple come to see me and it's straight after an infidelity, and I say, well, let's look at what's wrong with the relationship, the betrayed spouse is going to walk out the door. Because it's like, I'll tell you what's wrong. Again, let's say it's the man. He just cheated. That's what's wrong. He can't keep his flies done up. That's what's wrong. So the first thing I'm usually doing is a bit of crisis management, trying to understand the motivations for the cheating. And then when it feels safe enough, and particularly I'll take the follow the lead of the betrayed spouse, when she feels it's safe enough, then we can have a discussion about, let's look at your relationship before the affair. But if I jump there too quickly, I'm going to lose her confidence.
Okay. Well, I've got to do the news. It's 9:32. Oh, yes. Just to say a quick, I'll lead with another listener has written in and say, just to say my husband had an affair with me. I was single, and it's not always the case. Once a cheater, always a cheater, because we have been happily married for 45 years this June, and he has never cheated on me. This is to help some people, I hope. Happy Wednesday. Mm. More from Gavin Sharp and Riviera Wellbeing in Wednesday's Wellbeing Window after the new sports weather. It's just coming up to 20 minutes away from 10 o'clock and we've been bombarded by emails. I have Gavin Sharp with me in the studio, Riviera Wellbeing, and it's Wednesday's Wellbeing Window and we're talking about infidelity. Gavin, so I left you just before the news on the email from a listener explaining that she had actually been the person that somebody had left their partner for, and she claims that it's once a cheater, always a cheater is not the case, because she's since been happily married for 45 years this June, and her husband has never cheated on her. She then added to that saying, please don't think I'm dreadful taking someone else's husband. I get on very well with his ex and we have a relationship. She said many years ago that we were made for each other, which was a lovely thing to say. Hence, is there one out there for you that you should be with? I don't know whether you've watched The One on Netflix, have you?
I haven't. No, I haven't seen that. Okay, I'm diarising that, The One.
Yes, it's all about how they come up with this app that that very scarily kind of says there is one person, your DNA, that you should be with. And then it obviously leads to just couples divorcing and separating because they suddenly, through this app, if they go onto this match app, they suddenly find themselves having to be with the one they're supposed to be with. But it's not scientifically proven, of course, so it gets very messy. But watch it. It's a very good watch.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, it's a wonderful, romantic, I think, ideal. And I don't want to take away because I don't have the answer. I don't know if there's such a thing as the one. But I do think that when we put an expectation that we have to find the one, what we sometimes do is have this expectation that our romantic partner is going to meet all of our needs. And again, I was talking about Esther Perel earlier, and she says affairs aren't what they used to be because relationships aren't what they used to be, because there is, we're often obsessed that we have to find the one. This person has to meet all of my needs. And what if actually my partner can't meet all my emotional and sexual needs? So is a monogamous relationship the best for us? And that's for, of course, that's for not for me to decide as the therapist. Ooh. It's for every couple to decide.
Okay, another question. My partner had a one-night stand on a business trip with a work colleague. Should I forgive him? Apparently I should get over it as it wasn't an affair.
Well, I don't know about the kind of, apparently I should get over it. Again, what sometimes happens in a case like this is there is sometimes pressure from the cheating partner. And we call this gaslighting, where one, the person who's done the cheating is kind of trying to play with the reality of the other person, and they'll either minimize it or they deny it. And so again, if this is a couple that's in a monogamous relationship, then they need to decide about, or the person who's, I don't know if it was a male or female, but the person who's been betrayed needs to think about whether they do want to forgive. What I would usually say is, you know, what's the alternative to forgiveness? It's resentment. However, in this case, what sort of got my heckles up a bit or got me interested was the fact that, well, you should forgive it. It was just a one-night stand. I bet you it's a man. It was just a one-night stand. It was only, and I think you can only forgive when the wrong has been acknowledged. And forgiveness is a process.
So you don't make way for any just a mistake?
Yes, but you have to see that the other person is prepared to acknowledge it's a mistake. Mm. So in what you just read out, what I heard, if I heard correctly, was it a business trip and it was just a one-night stand.
Yeah, one-night stand on a business trip with a work colleague.
Okay, well, it's clearly bothering the partner because the partner's written in. So you, the betrayed spouse, you may think it's just this, but I would usually in the therapy room, I'd say, now look at her and see what she's saying. Because she's saying something different.
Yeah, she wants to know whether she should forgive.
Well, and it's going to be really hard to forgive until you recognize that in her eyes, there's been a wrongdoing. Mm. And if you can't work through that process of, you know, we have to earn forgiveness. And if you think that it's done, then there's not much work for you to do in the therapy room. So, you know, we need to work towards forgiveness. And sometimes the betraying spouse will say, well, how long is it going to take? And my reply is, well, as long as it needs to.
Okay, well, I hope that was helpful and answered your question. Another one, just listening to Gavin, and I was wondering if he can discuss about LGBT relationship cheating. Is, in his opinion and experience, cheating more common between LGBT couples? And does it vary in tolerance of forgiveness between LGBT and straight couples?
I don't think it varies in terms of if the marriage contract has been broken, then it's been broken. And I don't think that matters whether you're, gay, lesbian, trans, it doesn't matter. There's been a breach of trust. I think that, again, according to the research, there gay men do cheat more than in heterosexual relationships. Again, could just be because men are happy to talk about their affairs more. I think that when you look at, for example, gay men, a lot of gay men, you know, sex and relationships has grown up in a less conventional way. Sometimes they have, therefore, more or rather less conventional relationships. There's a willingness to consider open relationships, polyamorous relationships, for lots of gay men, being promiscuous has been part of how they've had to claim their identity. So I think, yes, I think there is a different vibe to LGBT relationships. But ultimately, if two people have an expectation, even if it's there are certain rules of you can't see the same person twice, or you can only cheat when you're on holiday or on a business trip. Again, whatever it is that you've both agreed, if one of you has strayed and you have secrets that you have kept to yourself, which of course is the definition of a secret, then you're causing damage to the relationship.
Yeah, so whatever your sexual orientation, does it come back to, I guess, the treat others as you wish to be treated, no matter what your sexual orientation. Another listener has written in, my husband got caught having meetups with other men. He says he isn't gay. I don't know if I'm crazy for staying in the marriage. What do you think? Why else would he have sex with other men?
I see this a lot, and it is possible for, and it happens, that men who identify as being straight will sometimes enjoy having sex with other men. They don't see that they are gay as an identity. So it's possible that that's what this person fits into that category. And it's also possible that he doesn't want to face the fact that he is gay. So difficult to know. And one point I don't want to miss when I'm talking about all of this is I do want to get across what it's like to be a betrayed spouse in a relationship, because research shows, and I see this in the therapy room, that if we've been betrayed, it is equivalent, what we experience as the betrayed spouse is equivalent to PTSD. And we often think about post-traumatic stress as something that war veterans experience. But actually, if my reality's been tinkered with, then I'm going to do things like have flashbacks. I will be hypervigilant. There will be rage. And that's why the work goes slowly. Because for the person who's had their world turned upside down and their reality tinkered with, they need to be able to manage their trauma. So when, you know, listeners are writing in, should I get over it? Should I forgive? Possibly, but in time, because first the person who's been betrayed has to be able to have their trauma acknowledged and to be able to work it through.
Okay, Gavin Sharp with us, Riviera Wellbeing, Wednesday's Wellbeing Window, all about infidelity. We're going to take a short break and just read out this message from a listener who says, here's a question for Gavin. French people in general consider sex as a bodily function and not important. Anyone who has been in a relationship with a French person may recognise this. I had a beautiful French girlfriend who suddenly announced one day, don't worry if you have an affair, it happens. Nothing would have been further from my mind at the time, as I was really in love. At parties, she was often openly propositioned by other men who knew we were together. It's just a game for French people. I'll let you answer that after this. Serge Gainsbourg and Jane Birkin with Je t'aime moi non plus on Riviera Radio. Riviera Wellbeing, Gavin Sharp is here with me for Wednesday's Wellbeing Window, all about infidelity. And I left you with a bit of a long one there just before we went into Je t'aime moi non plus. Do you have the answer for the person that was basically saying French people have a completely different approach to it, and anyone who's been with a French person would have probably experienced it? I have to say, personal experience, yeah, I agree with that.
So I'm about to lose any French clients that I've ever had. I'm about to lose. Look, yes, of course, there are cultural differences. And it goes back to the point that we said earlier in the show, which is that, you know, couples need to talk. It's not very romantic, I know, when you first meet and you get together. And the two things that couples don't talk about are money and sex. And what do you think about it? What does infidelity mean to us? But yes, cultural differences, and the French can be a bit more liberal.
Well, they just seem, I mean, my attitude towards it has definitely changed after, well, living here longer than I lived in the UK, basically, just more relaxed about it. But that being said, I think, and this is another discussion for another day, that it leads to a completely different relationship between women in France, and friendships between women is not at all, in my experience, the same as women in
sure.
the UK, because
sure
that
the
might
case.
Play a part.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about me. Moving on, I find the discussion today very interesting. Is the assumption that mahogany?
You got a mahogany relationship?
Yes, it's the prevailing. Oh, you're going to lose me in a minute. It's the prevailing model for a happy relationship.
No, I don't think so. I think it's the model that we typically have been brought up with, but polyamorous couples, which, you know, couples who, people who are committed in love and having sex with more than one person with the knowledge of their partner, hey, if it works for you, that's absolutely fine. Again, what works for you both?
Okay, and time for one more. Maya, you might have some we can fit in just before the international news headlines at 10, but I also want to talk about what we'll be discussing next month's Wednesday's wellbeing window. Finally, I found out my wife is recently in touch with her ex-boyfriend from university. She says, I'm ridiculous for being jealous as he lives in another country, but it bothers me. Who would you side with?
Well, I'm a therapist, I wouldn't side with either of you, but jealousy is an emotion, so I would never minimize an emotion. So I think there's a discussion to be had between you and your partner as to why you feel jealous. And we're back to where we started at the beginning of the hour, which is, what's the definition of infidelity? And if you've discovered that the partner has now, in touch with an ex, then and they're having an emotional connection. Again, when you look at sometimes at the text or you look at the contact, if the person is sharing emotional secrets that they wouldn't share with their partner, well, to me, that's a breach of trust. Why are you sharing all this stuff with an ex?
Okay, I hope you found that helpful. And we'll fit in the very last one. When my husband had an affair, he said that men just need more sex. Is that true? I still feel very hurt.
Well, even if it is true, I think it's a pretty poor answer, because as I said earlier, we still have to take responsibility. I think men are easily turned on. I think men think about sex more, but it doesn't mean we have to act upon it. So I think that whether it's true, that to me sounds a little bit like a bit of denial, a bit of gaslighting.
Okay, well, thank you very much for all the emails. Gavin, tell me, what's coming up on next month's Wednesday's wellbeing window?
I thought we'd talk about mahogany relationships.
I can't say the word, let alone do it.
I thought we would talk about childhood, and I thought we would talk about how our childhoods shape us for the rest of our lives.
Oh,
good,
crikey.
Bad, and different.
I'll definitely be a nervous wreck.
And we're going to talk about
then.
Yours, Sarah, particularly.
You haven't got long enough. And Rob, hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be both of us. I do apologise, the last time you were with Rob on your own.
You just won't do the show, both of you with me. It's I'm very hurt.
Well, no, it's a pleasure to have you in. Thank you so much for coming in. And thank you for all the work that you put in behind this, because you do, so much preparation goes into it. Riviera Wellbeing, Gavin Sharp, of course. And how can people contact you if they'd like to get in contact with you?
So they can check out my website, which is rivierawellbeing.com, or you can email me, gavin@rivierawellbeing.com. And thank you, Sarah, and again to the team at Riviera Radio for talking about really challenging topics. So thank you.
Well, you know what we've got to do now, Gavin?